Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Good morning. Happy Friday. Bill Ryder with you, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. It may just seem like another day. Another day for executive producer Tom DiBenedetto in New York, just like every other day before and going forward. Another day for me here in Los Angeles, California. But in fact, yesterday, I went to my first professional sporting event, Suns at Lakers Game 3, in 14 months, 15 months, somewhere in that range. The last one was also a Lakers game. We'll talk about that experience. I felt bad about my accurate criticism of the Clippers and, you know, playoff P's pants and just, you know, what that's like for Clippers fans. I did, and I needed to reach out and make amends. So I found all 7 Clippers fans and started a group text, and I'll share some of the details of that with you later. It was cool. We got, you know, kind of got together and were able to hash out some things. Steve's super funny. Also, and I'm not even going to get into anything other than Kwame Brown is a formidable guy. And if you have missed or only somewhat followed, I know it's a little old, the former number one overall draft pick, who, by the way, played 13 years in the NBA and made $67 million. His shots fired, I guess return shots fired, he didn't start it, against Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson and Gilbert Arenas. It's an hour and a half. And I'll just say this. If you don't have an hour and a half, do not watch the first 3 minutes. Because I did not get a lot of sleep last night because I was at Staples Center doing a live shot after the game, which I enjoyed for CBS Sports HQ. And then I made the mistake on the drive home of putting just the Kwame Brown YouTube video on my phone just to listen to. And then when I got home with the intention to go to sleep, I decided to break out some drinks and just go down the Kwame Brown rabbit hole. Dude's amazing. We'll hit that. Shohei Ohtani got lost. Couldn't start. And I'm being literal. The worst play in Major League Baseball history happened yesterday. And we'll get into whether it's just weird timing or both those gentlemen in strange ways are boycotting the commissioner of Major League Baseball by trying to see if they can one-up him in that whole baseball cap thing with just a whole other level of baseball incompetence. Open question. Rob Dibble, longtime major leaguer, my buddy, is going to be on the show an hour from now. We'll do some picks for you. And I'll say this. Crushed my picks yesterday. Every single pick I made on the show, correct. Went on CBS Sports HQ, ratted off the same picks, and then went with a confident best bet Anthony Davis over on the 25.5. Crushed it. We'll get into Bum of the Week. There's a lot of nominees for that. And we'll do buy or sell. So, the last time, sort of my, all of us, you, me, everybody, have memories of the experience before this pandemic curtain closed down around us. What, last March, more than a year ago. And I'm sure for you, and certainly for me, some of the stark juxtapositions are in my professional life, what my life was like day to day pre-pandemic and post-pandemic. And as I understand it from most people, the NBA shutting down, even if you don't cover the NBA for a living, and even if you're not an NBA fan, was just one of those moments where people realized, oh man, this is going to be a different kind of thing. I happen to cover the NBA, and so I had been going to almost every Lakers game pre-pandemic to do hits pre- and post-game. I had been to Kobe's memorial service, spent a lot of time at Staples Center because of Kobe's passing, had been in New York City for a stretch and done some on-air work, and then the world came crashing down. And I suppose it's appropriate, if not a little ironic, that the first sporting event that I've been to professionally since the pandemic, and I'll be in New York City next week at Nets-Celtics, which will almost certainly be a closeout game if we get there. In fact, I'm probably not going to be at that game. Now that I think about it, that's a game five. I'm not going to be at that game. I will be at Knicks-Hawks, though, wherever that series is at. But the first, for me, sporting event I returned to was the Lakers game last night. And it was really eerie because over on CBS Sports HQ, which is a streaming sports network, I hope you're in on. Hope you're checking it out. I'm our NBA guy over there. Great, great folks. Great content. Did a pregame hit. And they said to me in the morning, like, hey, we really want to do the vibe. Just give us the energy when you get down there. I'm like, all right, okay. All right, cool. You think there'll be energy? Yeah, well, we'll see. So I got down there. And it was basically an episode from The Walking Dead when that show was still cool, minus the zombies or even a couple people. I actually did two laps around Staples Center. I park in the garage next to Staples and I walk the long way around. And normally you can't get through sort of because it's where the players park. But I just walked through because like no one cared. I mean, literally, I think you could have walked up to LeBron's SUV and just been, what's up, bro? Because no one was around. Did it twice, nobody there. Restaurants, there were literally two restaurants open. I had to eat. I had to go to a hotel restaurant. I go to the JW Marriott just because there were two restaurants and they had 3-hour waits and there were 9 people there. And this sad moment, this interesting moment happened where the Suns bus pulled up and it did occur to me, Chris Paul's on that bus. I bet Chris Paul does not know I am looking into that bus. And 6 Lakers fans began booing the Suns bus. And I can remember times where there'd be hundreds of people. And it really spoke to the way the game felt when I finally got inside. This emptiness and this meshing of where we are, where we've been, and hopefully where we're going. It was really cool to be at the game. It was. And there were moments where the energy was really exciting. But Lakers fans, right, Staples Center, and I think it's going to be instructive for how much home court matters going forward. That crowd was exactly like Chris Paul in that game. They gave it everything they had for the first quarter and a half. They really tried to make up for a lack of ability to be at their best. In Chris Paul's case, because of his injury, and in that crowd's case, because there weren't very many of them. And they simply ran out of steam. It was fun being at the game. It was great being at Staples. It was really quiet. It wasn't any different than going to a Dodgers game as a fan a couple weeks ago. No lines, nobody in the bathroom, nobody around you. Amazing to be there. Moments that simulated that energy when you're at a big-time sporting event, but not what it used to be, and yet magical because I haven't experienced anything like it in a long time. Had there been a full crowd for what we saw last night, that place would have been untethered. Would have been incredible. Because the series is over. Not basic. The series is over. And it shifted last night, Lakers-Suns, in an incredibly significant way that goes beyond a 2-1 series lead. We know this. We saw this last year. We've seen this a lot in the last 7 or 8 years. That no lead that used to feel more or less historically safe is actually safe. The Denver Nuggets, who are a great basketball team, but are not world-class. Not yet. They're not. They're just not. They're not the Lakers. They're not what people think the Nets are. They're not what I think the Bucks are. They're not what the Warriors were when they were making their runs. The Denver Nuggets mounted 2 3-1 series comebacks last year, including against the Clippers. We've seen the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history in the last 5 or 6 years in Tom Brady. We've seen one of the great comebacks in the history of baseball as it relates to a cursed club in the Chicago Cubs coming back down 3-1 against the Cleveland Indians, also in 2016. So I understand that in theory, a 2-1 series lead for the Lakers against the Suns team that is the 2 seed and played great and is in the top 10 in offense and defense, that it is borderline preposterous in most situations for someone like me or me to say the series is over. But it felt like it shifted on its axis yesterday, far beyond the fact the Lakers won a game. And it, for me, revolved around 2-star players and the reality, at least in this series, of 2-star players. The first is Anthony Davis. Now, I was asked yesterday by Joe Musso, host at CBS Sports HQ, it was a great question. Is Anthony Davis the most effective, important, dominant player in the playoffs right now, given the fact that LeBron, you know, it looks good, but hasn't been taking a lot of shots? And I've never thought of that. And he asked me on live TV, so I had to kind of think quickly. And I, you know, there are guys in Brooklyn who would beg to differ, and only one who I think actually could make an argument, that someone is Kevin Durant. I think Denver fans would make a case for Nikola Jokic, and I think it's a reasonable case. But that's only answered in the affirmative if Jokic and the Nuggets continue to progress. Jokic has to be able to win big games and be the guy that wins games. And I think for me, that's sort of where the list stops. And Anthony Davis has some help here, right? He happens to play with LeBron James, who can choose to facilitate for AD, and then in big crunch time moments, right? The third quarter, and this happened yesterday, the Suns make a run in a fourth quarter like we saw in Game 2. LeBron can just step up and hit huge shots, but LeBron doesn't have to score 37 to be LeBron anymore. If AD can be AD for big chunks of the game. So that's helpful. It's also helpful that Anthony Davis is the best defensive player on a team that, even without him and LeBron, was one of the better defensive teams in the NBA. And in the whole, the Lakers were the best defensive team in the NBA in the regular season. That is not a small thing. But it's also true, and I talk about this all the time, I think it's really instructive and really important that, and I love the quote from Churchill that I misquote constantly, but the meaning is right. And that is, success is not final and failure is not fatal. And that's exactly what Anthony Davis has channeled, at least in the course of the series, because the guy was a bum in the first game. He was. I mean, I can use a different word. How dare you call someone a bum? Shut up. You know what I'm talking about. The guy was awful. Not you, shut up, but, you know, those people out there who want to argue about everything. Do you ever, like, interact with those folks? And you have to explain to them after they get done, like, being all self-righteous, no, I was agreeing with you. You just weren't able to follow it. But thank you for arguing with your own point. Could you just go please talk to the wall? Yes, I'm thinking about 3 specific people. Maybe one of them I work with, but not to this company. Just in case you're wondering. I am. Anthony Davis wasn't very good in Game 1. Anthony Davis called himself out, which, by the way, in and of itself is not the antidote. I've seen a lot of guys spew that drivel. Carmelo Anthony. Over the years. And not be able to adjust. Look, it's not easy to be self-aware. It's not easy to be self-critical. And being able to do that is an important step. But then being able to implement it under the pressure of something in a marriage, in a working relationship, if you're in sales, if you're an NBA player, is hard to do. And Anthony Davis did it in Game 2, and then he did it again yesterday. The most important moment of that game, outside of the second superstar I'm going to get to, was Anthony Davis. And this isn't usually true in a playoff game. In the first 7 or 8 minutes, just dominant in his need to have the ball in his hands. I'd love to see the usage rate for AD in the first half of the first quarter. I have no idea what it is. I would guess it was 45%. He wanted the ball. He attacked the rim. He took shots. He missed some shots. He got his own rebound. He got other guys' rebounds. He got easy buckets. He announced he was going to be there. That Anthony Davis makes the Lakers they were supposed to be, right? Is Anthony going to be healthy? Is LeBron going to be in rhythm? They are if AD plays that way. That's point number one. And it resonated far beyond me being in a building for the first time, far beyond that one game, far beyond that series. What we saw from Anthony Davis and the way the entire team responded and the way LeBron was able to take his foot off his own pedal and be able to save himself for the third quarter and later series, that should, and I promise you, does strike fear into the heart of every team in the NBA that thinks they have a chance to eventually advance and play the Lakers. It just does. The other significant thing that happened yesterday, and we've talked about it, but was Chris Paul. I did some reporting before the game, knowing I was going to be on TV for CBS Sports HQ. And again, and I said this on TV, no one in the Suns organization said, you know, no source said this is where Chris Paul is. Just surveying folks I trust on the periphery of this series or in the NBA that would know, very few people I talked to were optimistic about Chris Paul's health. And nobody said he was going to be okay. Like, at best it was, well, we'll see. Guys can heal. And in the early part of the game, I thought, I got duped. Look how good Chris Paul is. Oh, my God, he went to his right. Oh, my God, he hit a shot. And then, like that crowd at Staples Center, he just ran out of energy. He didn't have the stamina. Not a criticism. He was playing through a massive amount of pain. And there are two ways to look at the Chris Paul story, and they're both true. The macro view on this, right? The view from 10,000 feet is, here we go again. And it's weird. It's a bizarre thing how often he's hurt in these series. But if we just hone in on the micro view for this moment, for this game, for this series, right? Away from the blame, or why does he keep getting hurt, or how did it happen again, or is he cursed, or whatever you think it is. The guy's not right, and he's not going to be right. Played 27 minutes, scored 7 points. I know he's not traditionally a scorer. And he was effective enough early on when he willed himself through the pain before the pain clearly caught up to him that he was able to approximate Chris Paul, but he wasn't Chris Paul. There were critical stretches of that game. Stretches in the third and fourth quarter when the Suns made runs, tried to make runs, and when the Lakers made runs where he wasn't even on the floor. When clearly that Phoenix Suns offense was wayward, was wanting of direction, had guys that could be potentially great, but needed Chris Paul. And you saw it in Devin Booker having a really, really serious off game. You saw it in Devin Booker losing his cool and pushing Dennis Schroeder. And you saw it in the Suns getting, in the end, blown out of the building. Lakers didn't just win. They got the cover. It was 6.5. They won handily. Series is over. Series feels over. I know things can change. And I got to be careful not being too dogmatic in my view, too absolutist in my view that it's over. Because Anthony Davis, and I'm not wishing this into the universe, but he really could sprain his ankle getting a cup of coffee this morning. Like, that is how fragile the guy's body is sometimes. But as things stand now, the Suns have become last year's Suns because Chris Paul's hurt. And the Lakers have become last year's Lakers, even though it's a totally different group of characters around these guys, because AD found the version of himself he has to be. Last year's Suns ain't got no chance against this last year's Lakers, and that's where we are. And that's where we are. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. I want to talk on Kwame a little bit. I want to speak on the remarkable insight of a guy who's comfortable in his own skin. And he would take exception to this. I'm not important enough for him to do even 20 minutes on. He'd take exception to this, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's true. He's comfortable in his own skin, having failed to be the thing he was drafted to be, but succeeding at life. Those are different. And really succeeding in the association, right? I am a success right now today as a radio host, a massive success relative to my expectations for me. If Jim Rome had my career, right, for the next, he would not be a success. I understand it's measured against different things. But in the whole, Kwame Brown had an amazing career. And that brought some insight. That brought a perspective. That brought a freshness that allowed him to unearth maybe the most remarkable takedowns I've seen in sports media. And that is saying something. We'll get into that. And I do want to talk about this, that I reached out to every Clippers fan on earth, all seven of them in a group text. So all that's coming up next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on the program. Swapped out my Twitter avatar, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Put on a shot of me doing TV with the Lakers. I used to sub in when LeBron was in the playoffs. I would do it from the start of the playoffs when he got knocked out. There's a photo of me. I sent it to Tom DiBenedetto, executive producer, in Akron, talking to LeBron. I look like a hobbit looking for a mountain to throw a ring into. And I bumped into LeBron James, who is in a football uniform, because he gave really amazing Nike football equipment to his high school. And he, dude, that dude looks so big. Tom, what do you think? I look, I'm not super tall. I'm probably 5'8". I look like I'm 4 feet 11 in this photo.
Yeah, you look half his size. It's pretty amazing. There's like some kind of optical illusion going on because you're not actually half his size, but you look like you're halfway.
I mean, I'm looking up. I'm looking straight up at LeBron. And he's making a face. It's kind of like, actually, yeah, I'll talk to this guy. I'll talk to Ryder. So part of the job, right, part of the deal is being honest. And this is, for better or worse, it's one of the things that's always been true in my career. Even before when I was a columnist, it really came out. But even when I was just a reporter and writer at the Kansas City Star, I would just write the things that were accurate and that were honest that other people wouldn't write. It's easier to do when you can do it with opinion, right? Because I can just give you my opinion. And it offends people. It does. Carl Peterson, former GM of the Kansas City Chiefs, reported a story for a special section, I don't know, 15 years ago, that he was probably going to be fired, and it was an institution. And the illustrator of that special section did a photo of the Chiefs general manager as Custer with a bunch of arrows in him, and he was bleeding. And I didn't do that, but he didn't love that. And I was pretty critical of LeBron James when I covered him that first year in Miami. I can go through the list of the guys that I have. And if you listen to the show, you know. And I was pretty hard on the Clippers. I've been pretty hard on the Clippers. And I'm right. I'm accurate. I mean, you know, Playoff P is Pants as a nickname is a little mean, but true. And they're badly run, and they have a culture that has festered, despite the fact I think Ballmer's a really good owner. I could point you to three people that still work in that organization, and I'm not respecting anyone who works in fast food who shouldn't be serving you fries. And I've served people fries. I'm just telling you, including a guy in the PR department. And that's how bad he is at his job. But I felt bad, right? Because if you're a fan of the Clippers, that's hard to take, and you're down 2-0, and you have to deal with the Lakers. So I wanted to find a way to make it right to the Clippers Nation. I wanted to find a way to just make it okay. So, and it took me like 30 minutes. I tracked down the phone number for all 7 Los Angeles Clippers fans. The 5 here, and apparently there's 1 in Iowa and 1 randomly in Miami. All 7 of them. And I just got them on a group text and was like, hey Clippers Nation, you know, Steve, Becky, you know, Louie, John. There's 2 Johns. It's weird. Anyway, really sorry things aren't going well. You know, I know I've been going after your organization, but you, the entirety of Clippers Nation, should know I'm not doing it because I want you to fail. I'm just doing it, you know, your organization. I want to be honest. And, you know, there were some tough words and some nicknames thrown my way, Ryder the Nobody, you know, and a lot of talk about how LeBron's overrated. There's a lot of that. But it was cool. Like, Becky didn't know that John, that, you know, they're like, so I think they're actually engaged now because they've been looking for each other for so long. That's exciting. So, you know, there are 7 Clippers fans, but if things go well for Becky and John, maybe we'll have 9 or 10, you know? If we have twins, we could have 11, you know, many years from now, wishing that Mazel Tov and wishing them well. So anyway, it was just a nice, I know it sounds like I'm harsh, but I did. I reached out to literally every Clippers fan on earth, and you know, 6 of the 7 were really nice-ish. And the other one, you know, we're going to chalk it up to the drinking, some of those responses. So anyway, that was just, I'm glad that we could get together on the group text and hang out just a little bit. Kwame Brown is amazing. I don't even know what to say here. So All the Smoke is a podcast. And by the way, Brown's not right on everything he's saying. The criticism's part of the deal. And, you know, I talked about this yesterday. I think I view Osaka's unwillingness to speak to the media as a diva move. I do. And it doesn't matter the politics that surround that or how people run to their sort of spectrums on the political spectrum. She's an athlete, and there are expectations of athletes to do media, and I don't want to get into it all again. But Kwame Brown did get pretty seriously insulted on the All the Smoke podcast. Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes host it. They're very talented. And the thing that makes the podcast great is the thing that Brown takes down. So I can appreciate a remarkable takedown, even if I don't agree with it. It's like appreciating, as a writer, someone who writes a remarkably well-reasoned column that makes a great and compelling case that you want to agree with, even though I don't, right? I've seen people make the argument that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the greatest NBA player of all time. I don't think he is. I think he's 3, right? I think he's underappreciated. It ain't Kareem, but you're right, you know, you're amazing at what you do, and you write that take, I'm going to appreciate it. That's what Kwame Brown's takedown of the guys on All the Smoke was, following having Gilbert Arenas on and Gilbert. By the way, the context of the All the Smoke podcast, because I want to say this as a radio host who I think, outside of Playoff Pure Pants, is pretty nuanced and fair, even in my criticism, right? But you can just pull out the one thing. I get it. Like, you don't listen. Most people don't listen to the 11 minutes. I can't tell you how many times I write a column, and there's a headline on there, and it posts, and within 10 seconds, there's 40 people complaining who clearly either haven't read it or, in some cases, don't know how to read. I don't know which one it is, but it you know, I get it. So in this case, and on the All the Smoke podcast, did Gilbert Arenas call him a show pony? Yes. Did he take some shots? Yes. Were these shots fair or not fair, wrapped within a fairly respectful and nuanced conversation about Kwame Brown? I thought that they were. But also, you had Jackson and Barnes chuckling. I mean, it was disrespectful, even though it was complicated. Okay. So Kwame Brown did an hour and a half YouTube response. And by the way, now it's become all these other things he's going after. Guys that yell for a living on TV. He went after Charlamagne the God. I mean, it's just like he went after Jemele Hill, but then Jemele's just like, no, I meant it's a quote from Game of Thrones. We're good. Brown is, I didn't know this about him, is so funny, is so sharp, is so biting. Again, not everything he said I agree with, and I don't want to get into some of his beliefs beyond this, but here are some of the things that he said. And I also respect someone who just goes with a nickname. Right? Like, who just goes with a nickname. He will not call Matt Barnes Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes is only referred to for an hour and a half as Becky with the good hair. For 90 minutes. On Steven, and I can't give you most of the language and words that Kwame Brown uses, and I'm certainly not endorsing it or making any kind of comment on the vernacular that he uses, other than to say I don't judge other people and I haven't walked in those shoes and lived that life experience. And it's amazing nonetheless. On Steven Jackson, I'll just give you one of the quotes. Steven Jackson, and I think this is true, too. The thing about Brown that's amazing is you realize he ain't lying. He tells a story that he mixes in and out about getting in a fight with a 300-pound guy at a bar while playing because his buddy, who was a short guy but was good with the ladies, took the guy's woman. Jumped on his head like a trampoline. He's like, that's the old Kwame Brown kids that don't endorse violence. While he's smoking. It's amazing. All right. Kwame Brown and Steven Jackson. Steven Jackson, I seen you crying every time Charles Oakley about to slap the bleep out you, so I know you. He calls them feminine gentlemen, though he doesn't use the word gentleman. And I can't even tell you what he says about Gilbert Arenas. I don't even know how to construct this in a way that is even remotely acceptable to you as an audience that may or may, you know, not have children listen or whatever. So I'll just say this. There is something refreshing about someone. And the thing that made it amazing, right? He's become this cult hero. The thing I'm talking about has been viewed, I think, 300,000 times as of last night. I don't know where it is now. His self-awareness of his shortcomings, his understanding of his successes that haven't been credited, the nuance with which he views his own life and his experience, the story he tells about his father and his brothers. His brothers went to prison for selling drugs, he talks about. The way that he saw the world and watching his mother suffer from that, the complicated and interesting and damaged, and I don't mean in a permanent way, I mean the way we all are, right? The things that damage us that don't break us, you know, broken in the hard places, but then you make it through and it makes you stronger. Kwame Brown, I had no idea how interesting he was, and I've never talked about Kwame Brown on the radio. I've never needed to. I've never said that he sucked or was the biggest bust of all time. I'm sure had I been in radio during that time, it would have been a perspective that I would have echoed and parroted. And so I want to apologize for something I didn't even say, because it is easy to fall into these tropes sometimes. It is. And I was like bouncing around, and his attack on Charlamagne the God is it's pretty amazing. It's like 3 minutes long. You can Google it. It's compelling theater, right? It's not radio, but it's what they'd call good radio. But that's 3 minutes. You know, I listened to a couple. And then I was coming back from the Lakers game, and I thought, all right, I'll just listen to the hour and a half, like, rebuttal. I couldn't stop. I got home 25 minutes in. I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to stay up. I was tired. I'm going to stay up another hour and listen to this. I wasn't going to drink. I'm like, I'm not going to drink because, it's like 11:30 at night. I'm like, all right. I went to the fridge. I'm like, do I want beer or white wine? That's what's in the fridge. I'm like, I'm not pulling out the whiskey. I'm like, I feel like it's a white wine kind. I feel like I'm going to need to, I need a whole bottle. I did. And not the whole thing. I couldn't stop listening. So treat yourself. Go listen to Kwame. Bogus, I hope you've never taken shots at Kwame Brown in your career, because if you have, you just better prepare for your 2 pounds of flesh being removed from your body spiritually by this guy. Have you heard any of this?
I have not heard this, what you're talking about right now, but I have always been nice to Kwame because he and Smush Parker, my boy from Fordham, are the two least favorite Kobe Bryant teammates of all time. It's always amazed me that Kobe never wasted a chance to take a shot at Smush and or Kwame. So Kwame's always had a soft spot in my heart for being brothers in that regard with my boy Smush.
One of the best parts of the podcast. There's so much. I'm glad he talks about earnestly how Kobe scored 81 points, not largely because of, but there's a significant contribution of Kwame setting screens and knocking guys down. And there's somebody, was it David West, where he's like, I knocked that guy, he didn't say guy, I knocked that guy down, and, you know, the next week. And then he says at some point, yeah, man, he's so funny too, and self-deprecating, yeah, man, me and Kobe combined for 82 that night. And he breaks news. I didn't know this. It's interesting. Because obviously Kwame Brown, and the criticism was Jordan drafted him to play for the Wizards and be a part of that future, and Kwame couldn't live up to the expectations and let Jordan down. But Kwame says, and I believe him, he says, and it's never been reported before, that actually Jordan drafted him to trade him to the Bulls in a massive trade that would have moved some pieces around. And the deal was done. The deal was done. It was agreed to. It was part of the deal. Kwame Brown was going to go to Chicago, and the owner of the Wizards at the last minute freaked out and was like, we're doing too many trades. This guy's too prominent. No, we're keeping him. And that the reason, according to Kwame, sort of what he's insinuating, and I'll make the leap, is that Jordan didn't punish him for being not living up to Jordan's expectations. Jordan punished him because he had no expectations and didn't want him there, which is really interesting.
And different.
Yeah. I mean, set up to fail, right? I mean, that's Jordan bullied him and abused him, and Kwame Brown kept saying, God, it was so good. He talked about how, he goes, what corporation disparages an asset that it acquires at its own choosing? He's right. I mean, it'd be like Viacom CBS being like, we just paid $2 billion for Champions. Like, who wants to watch soccer? Right? I mean, who cares? It would be like ESPN spending the billions it has on the NFL and saying, to be honest, we think the concussion thing's a problem. I'm not sure you should watch the sport. I mean, it's true. I was going to cut some clips and play it on the show, and I just realized, I just can't. Like, I can't. Literally, there is a word that is used that is a word that I have never spoken out loud in my life because I don't think it's appropriate, and I would never judge, and I think it's racist, just frankly. I hate it when white people are like, why do black people say this word? Hey, bro, we white people got our chance at that word a long time ago. We don't get to use it. But that word is every other word. So, like, there's literally no way to play it on radio. It'd be like, hey, the bleep. It'd just be every other word be bleeped. You wouldn't even know what's happening. It'd be like a guess the sentence thing. So good. So smart. Such a takedown. Worth your time. And he scored 82 points with Kobe. I don't know if you knew that.
Kobe. He did.
Combined for 82 once.
One of the best game teammates I've ever had.
What a combo. What? How are you doing, Bogus? Everything good?
Everything's good. How are you today?
I'm a little tired because Kwame, whatever. Nobody wants to hear how... It's like, hey, you want to hear my bad beat story in poker? No. No, I don't. There's nothing like being at a poker tournament and being on a bathroom break and going to the restroom, and there's just all people are doing talk about how, I would have won if you hadn't, like, and I do it too. It's just the worst. So I'm wonderful, not sleepy at all. Everything's great. I'm in a great mood. It was really weird to be at this Lakers game. It was weird. Not even sure if I liked it, but it was
good weird?
I mean, it was really loud for the first quarter and a half, and then just the crowd ran out of steam, which was weird in the sense that the Lakers won. So it's not like it went the other direction. It's not like what happened to Knicks fans maybe in game one of that series where they lost. It was fun to be doing live TV again. It was remarkable to see the athletes in person, but it just, I've been to so many Lakers games. It did. You know what it is? It didn't feel like a playoff game. The Dodgers game was cool because it wasn't. It was a, you know, it was a game on a Monday. It was fine. It was fine. It was a step in the right direction. I wouldn't slander Kwame Brown if I were you. I'm just going to give you that your update. Okay. I'm just keep his name out your mouth and all of us. That is a keep his name out of all of us. His name out of our mouths. Doesn't really translate the same way in the plural, but whatever. And with that said, with that respect extended to Mr. Brown, the microphone is yours, Bogus.
I'm only going to speak about us, and normally we are very humble on this show, but I think we deserve a pat or two on the back after last night because we were right, if memory serves correct, the Bucks covered last night in Miami. Now, none of us thought we get a second consecutive blowout, but we got that, 113-84 in Miami. That's 63 points of wins over the last two games for Milwaukee. There are one win now from a sweep, so how do you avoid that, Jimmy Butler?
No, we can't even skip to Saturday at this point. We got to figure out ways to be better tomorrow. And go into it with the same mentality, knowing that we got to get one before we can get anything
else. Game four still in South Beach is tomorrow. Austin Rivers with four fourth quarter threes to help the Nuggets close out a 120-115 win in Portland, which I believe is another win for us. Nikola Jokic chipped in with 36 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists. Denver leads 2-1, just like the Lakers, who dumped the Suns, 109-95. That's a win for me and Tom, I believe, from yesterday. Chris Paul just 7 points and 6 assists in 27 minutes because of that shoulder. Anthony Davis with 34, 21, and 9 assists for LeBron James. Another series ended on ice last night.
Hamilton with it again. Here is what he scores!
Scalco on Hurricanes Radio. The goal eventually awarded to Sebastian Aho, but the point remains. Carolina closing out Nashville in 6 games, 4-3 in overtime. Fourth straight game for that series going past regulation. The Canadiens extending their season with a 4-3 OT win in Toronto. Game 6 tomorrow back in Montreal. A traffic jam on the Bay Bridge meant Shohei Ohtani couldn't get to the ballpark in Oakland in time to prep to pitch last night, so he was just the DH, 0-3 with a K in a 5-0 loss to the A's. Ohtani should start tonight. The Yankees beat the Blue Jays 5-3 to split their doubleheader, and the Dodgers beat the Giants again 4-3. LA's 4-4 in their series this season. And the WTA says it's open to a dialogue with Naomi Osaka, who says she will not do any press during the French Open to preserve her mental health. The WTA says its players' mental and emotional health is a top priority, but also that players have a responsibility to speak to the media and to their fans. Osaka wants her fine money to go to mental health charities. Bill, back to you.
Bogus, thank you. And Andrew, you're going to be very excited about this. You like dares, right? You like challenges like I do. Like, can somebody one-up somebody? And Robert Manfred, we're going to make the game as boring as we can, see? He really tried to create basically a floor. Like, you can't go lower than this in baseball. I'm going to give you the worst version of sort of baseball execution possible. And two guys stepped up to the plate. Shohei Ohtani and some random guy that plays for the Pirates. Like, you know what? We are gonna be even worse at executing our baseball jobs than Manfred. And that's a remarkable challenge. That's a gauntlet thrown. And I can't believe they were able to accomplish it, Bogus. And I hope you're excited, because I am. We're going to talk about
can't
that.
Can't wait.
How'd they do it, see? Walter Cronkite. We're going to do it next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Appreciate you. Thanks for hanging. Happy Friday. So two really bizarre things happened yesterday in Major League Baseball. And I have a theory about what's going on. See, and we'll get into the details here, but Shohei Ohtani, who is the most mesmerizing player in baseball, was scheduled to pitch against the A's. And the way that this normally works, because I have covered enough Warriors playoff games to know, Warriors old arena next to where the ballpark is. Teams stay in San Francisco, they stay in the city, and then they drive out to Oakland. You got to go across the bridge. It can be problematic. You got to leave super early. And Ohtani, who is going to start and therefore not play DH, got stuck in traffic. Have you ever even heard of this? got stuck in, because I live in LA, right? Obviously, I mean, the late great Kobe Bryant would sometimes take a helicopter into Staples, but he would often drive from Orange County. It's a long, that could be 2 hours. You just have to leave early. This is the way it works in some places. You leave early. You give yourself time. Ohtani couldn't make it to the game in time because of the traffic. So tried to go to the BART, which is their public transportation light rail system, and couldn't make it to the game despite that. And then they said that there was a connection problem, and BART had to release a statement that said, by the way, what an honor to have a mesmerizing talent like Ohtani, but everything was fine. Which means Ohtani and his translator was there and somebody else clearly just didn't know how to transfer, which makes sense because I've been confused on BART before too. And to be fair to Ohtani, I told the story to Tom DiBenedetto, I have always, or most of my career, the last 10 years, I've had, not 10 years, 6 years, I've had a radio show and NBA obligations at night. And it can be a little tricky sometimes when I'm traveling. And I have missed big chunks of finals games because I've been stuck on that bridge twice. One time, I made the mistake of getting lunch, right? And just I got stuck. It took an hour to get on that bridge. It took an hour and a half to get off that bridge. It took me 4.5 hours to get to the arena. And I came in after halftime. And one time, and not that you need the whole story, but long story short, we got stuck in traffic. Then my Uber driver freaked out and drove down the wrong way. I tried to do a shortcut that led to a dead end, and I missed the game. I walked in and did my live hit. Didn't watch the game. Was in an Uber for six hours. So it happens. And then you had this insane situation with Will Craig, the Pirates first baseman. I'm going to set it up for you, then I'm going to let you listen to it. But here's the deal. There's a runner on third. There's two outs. Javi Baez is up. He hits a pretty easy chopper. I think it was the third base. The throw to, right, so you know this, right? You played any kind of baseball. Even if you just played wiffle ball or you played little league ball halfway decently like I did. I was pretty good, actually, for a short guy. Left-handed, right? Hit the ball. Favorite thing about baseball was I was so little, the manager would always call the kids in. I would just hit the ball over their heads. Bad speed. What are you doing? Anyway, all you have to do, if two outs, to prevent the runner on third from scoring is step on the bag at first. That's all you got to do. Doesn't matter the timing of that situation. Just step on the bag. The runner doesn't score, even if he crosses the plate first. This is baseball 101. This is baseball one. This is like baseball. This is not even like 101 to college analogy. This is like fourth grade baseball. This is you're 3 years old and you can't really talk, but you know how baseball works. Two would be a better age for not really talking. And Javi hits the ball to third base. Third baseman throws the ball to Craig. Ball's off the bag a little bit. But Javi, you know, Javi's not busting his ass down the line. And he's just sort of trotting up. And the guy, instead of deciding to just step on first, chases Baez starts walking toward Baez to tag him. So Baez turns and runs back to home plate. And the guy in third realizes, holy cow, I can score. So there's a play at home plate. Think about it. There's two outs. There's a runner on third. There's a easy out to the third baseman. He throws the ball to the first baseman. First baseman doesn't step on the bag. And there's a play at home plate where Javi Baez and I don't know who scored, the Cub on third, both slide into home plate. Both go into home plate. And the run counts. And then Javi goes to first and they throw it away and he makes it to second. And this is what it sounded like.
Here's the 0-2 home and a swing and a ground ball on to third base. He took a neck-high pitch and hit it on the ground to third. Now Baez running back toward home plate.
Tag him.
Tag him quickly. And what did Craig do there? They get a run out of that, and now they got to get the out at first. And they throw it into right field. That's going to get a run for the Cubs. Oh, my, what a loony play. And he's in at second base. Just tag him out. What was that? The Cubs are going to get a run, and Baez is safe at second base on a routine ground out to third. Oh, the calliopes can be heard from here to Sewickley.
It's literally the worst play I've ever seen in baseball. In baseball. Not in Major League Baseball. In the history of baseball. And I thought it was just, you know, a boneheaded play, and I thought it was Ohtani just, whatever, dealing with traffic in the Bay for the first time. And then I realized, these guys are smart. They're playing chess and I'm playing checkers because they saw what Manfred's done. They've seen his moves. We're gonna put out caps, see? They don't have anything to do with the city. And they said, we're going to have a race to the bottom. How do we showcase the commissioner's incompetence? We demonstrate his leadership through our own actions. So, Will Craig, I salute you. That or I think that's terrible and you're going to be bum of the week in an hour. One of the two are definitely coming. One of the two is a real thing. I want to get Dibble. I can't wait to hear Rob Dibble. Hey, Dibble, what do you think about that Will Craig play? And he's going to get angry for 10 minutes, and it's going to be magical radio. And you're going to get to listen to it, and I think you should, next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Rob Dibble, longtime major leaguer, broadcaster, NLCS MVP, so-called bad boy of baseball, closer extraordinaire, and my buddy joins me now. Dibs, what's going on, dude?
How are you, Bill? Happy Friday.
I'm good, and happy Friday to you, too. And I never thought I'd watch the most embarrassing play that I've seen in baseball history and celebrate it, but since my Cubs were able to somehow score a run on this crazy moment we just talked about, I wanted to get your perspective. Did you see this play with Will Craig and Javi Baez and all that had to happen is the Pirates step on first base, but they forgot the rules of baseball?
I did. And, you know, these guys should be embarrassed. You're major leaguers. You should know how many outs there are in the inning. I coach 5 AAU teams. So, I mean, it was a teaching moment for me with my 13-year-olds yesterday. But, yeah, I mean, listen, you just got to catch the ball, step on the bag sometimes, you know. And even if there's less than two outs, you step on the bag and throw home. And yell tag. I mean, it's stuff we work on all the time in practice. We do it at second base. If it's to the first baseman and he's a foot from the bag, step on the bag, get the sure out, and then throw to second and try to get the tag. So, it is embarrassing because these guys, Bill, refuse to take infield. I mean, think of the NBA or the NHL. If the players just all of a sudden decided, listen, I don't want to wake up early and go to shoot around. I don't want to wake up early and go to the early skate. You know, think of how awful. I mean, sometimes basketball's hard to watch. Sometimes hockey's hard to watch. But baseball's just, it's awful right now. With the strikeouts and the bad defense and the bad base running. And it's just these guys don't take it seriously. And here's the thing. Because the teams and the coaches don't enforce it. The teams and coaches have let the players run wild. And this is no slight on Will Myers, but a couple of years ago with the Padres, he's like, I don't want to take ground balls at third. So they moved him to the outfield. I would have been like, listen, dude, it's your job. If you don't want to take infield, then we'll send you back to the minor leagues, and you could try to earn a minor league paycheck over a big league paycheck. That's the problem, Bill. We enable these guys to get away with this. And then when it happens, you shouldn't be shocked by it.
That's a great point. Rob Dibble on the show. Rob, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm mercilessly mean to Commissioner Manfred, and I think fairly so. But I am unimpressed with the guy. Is that a fair place to lay the blame? Because you just said, I love the sport. I love baseball. And it is just losing its relevance, certainly nationally. And it is hard to watch. Who do you blame? What do you blame for the state of the game right now?
The commissioner. I hammer him on my show every day. I have Kevin Kernan on, the former New York Post writer, that has covered East Coast, West Coast baseball for 45 years. And we laugh about it. They even put up printed out t-shirts. I'll send you one. It's called Over Nerding. And the 7-inning doubleheader crap has got to stop. The base runner on second and extra innings. Although if you did it maybe the 11th or the 12th, I could see it, but not immediately in the 10th inning. It's, you're trying to make a fast food, timed event out of an event for 150 years that's never been timed. Baseball doesn't have a clock. You end it on the last out and the last at bat. And I think you have a commissioner that doesn't love the game. You need a commissioner that loves the game. And just some of the other rules are just ridiculous. I at the lower level, honestly, midget football and 12-year-old baseball, you don't need to take out the second baseman and the catcher. But in Major League Baseball, you do, because you've been taught by that time at 18, 19, 20 years old to get off second base, come across the bag, and then throw to first or step back. And if the guy goes by the bag and slides into you, then both runners are out. I mean, there's ways around policing the game without changing the rules every 5 minutes. So, you know, you have a commissioner that thinks, hey, let's sit around with a committee and we'll change the rules. And now on top of it, and I have a lot of college coaches on my show, Bill, including UConn's Jim Penders. We just talked about this the other day as we go towards the College World Series. Moving the mound back a foot, do you know how many more injuries that's gonna happen on these kids? You know, because even yesterday at the 13-year-old practice, it's a long throw for the infielders to throw across the diamond when they go from a regular little league field to a big boy field, and the, you know, Babe Ruth and the Cal Ripken 16 to 18-year-old field. That is a big throw. Now you're going to tell 13-year-olds you have to move back another foot. You know, you're going to destroy these kids, and they're not going to want to play baseball, and I don't blame them. If I'm a parent and I could choose football, basketball, hockey over baseball so my kid doesn't need Tommy John surgery at 16 years old, Bill, I would do it in a second.
And I love Rob Dibble here on the program, Bill Ryder, writer of the new CBS Sports Radio. Dibs, I love the point you made about, never thought of this, Manfred doesn't love the game. It's a totally different thing, but the same principle applies. I love being a newspaper writer, and I believed in it when I came out of college 20 years ago. And idealistic, and it came out of a university that was known for it. And I was stunned by the degree to which newspaper companies had contempt for their product and their readers, right? Like, if people are in charge that don't believe in the mission's already failed. It's just a matter of time. Do you think this notion that Theo's going to be commissioner someday warrants a legitimate conversation and reasons for hope? Or do you think we're stuck? Because obviously baseball's tradition, it's not like the commissioner is the president and is out in 4 or 8 years. It's usually the long haul.
No, I would love to have Theo Epstein as the commissioner. You know, he loves the game. He left the Cubs because he loves the game. You know, and he was just like, you know, it's one thing. And listen, I use all the technology at my batting cages. And whether it's Rapsodo or the Hit Tracks or the TrackMan, I love it. It's an easier way for me to teach arm angles, spin rate on curveballs and changeups and sinking two-seam fastballs. It also shows me the release point, which is the number one thing that I try to teach young kids, that you have to throw every pitch from the same release point so that as you progress and you get into 13 to 15-year-old baseball, now the hitters can't pick up that slight little change on a curveball or a slider and getting around. So, you know, a lot of this stuff, but you can't just do overkill on it and be like so eaten up by it where you're saying a strikeout's not embarrassing. A strikeout's an unproductive at bat. I don't care what anybody tells me. You know, if I got a guy on second with no outs, I have to get him to third, whether that's a bunt or a ground ball to the right side or a deep fly ball to get that runner to third. That's just common sense to try to win a baseball game, and that's ultimately what your job is. Win the game. Win innings. Win every three outs. That's what we teach. So, you know, if you're teaching that and then all of a sudden some, you know, Yale or Harvard grad comes up to you and goes, by the way, you know, strikeouts don't matter. Stolen bases don't matter. Bunts don't matter. Can you imagine somebody in basketball, Bill, going free throws don't matter at the end of a game?
Yeah.
Don't matter. You know what? We've analyzed it. Doesn't matter. That's just nuts. So you've got people that don't love the game, don't even like the game. And they just think, hey, if I change a couple of words or if I tell you that this doesn't matter and beat it into your brain, then guys start to believe. But here's the thing. Managers in the major leagues are starting to just go away from it. Don Mattingly, the San Diego Padres manager, because they know stolen bases matter. They know hit and runs matter. They know getting the ball to the right side to move the runner over with no outs and get them to third base with it so you got an out and two chances to get them in. That stuff matters to the overall winning a baseball game. And so analytics are great, but if you live by them, you're going to die by them.
I love that example. Trent Grisham, who's on the IL now, 7 stolen bases, leadoff hitter for the Padres. Rob Dibble, to your point, Rob Dibble here on the program. Dibs, on a lighter note, and I'm not judging Shohei Ohtani. I just told this story. I missed a finals story. Game once on that bridge. I once missed an entire, I don't think I ever told CBS Sports that. CBS Sports, it's Bill. I missed one of the Warriors Cavs games in 2016 because I got stuck in traffic. It took me 5 hours to get, so I've been there. Have you ever, all right, so give me your, like, you played the big leagues, you played in the minors. What's the closest you ever came to? I mean, for this guy, missing a start because of traffic?
I mean, in the minor leagues, if you missed the bus, you were done. Because in the minor leagues, it wasn't like, you know, in the major leagues, you could just walk down the street a block and get a cab. Or there was usually cabs outside of every hotel. And, you know, you tip them 20, 30, 40 bucks instead of going to an airport trip, like in Chicago. They hated that, you know, and taking a cab over to Wrigley or over to the old Comiskey. And now, what is it? I don't even think it's cellular anymore. But, you know, they wanted to go to the airport and get, like, $50 as opposed to $20. So that was the only time when you were in trouble was probably the minor leagues. But, yeah, I mean, I remember Pascual Perez getting lost on I-95 on the way to Fulton County Stadium in Atlanta. That's a famous story. So that's really, you know, some guys, if you rent cars in strange towns that you're not familiar with, you could get screwed up. So, yeah, there's been times where I think Norm Charlton and I, we rented a car one time in San Diego to go to Jack Murphy Stadium. I think it was like a 20-minute drive. We got lost and went all the way to Miramar. And honestly, we got a tour of the base. And then we were kind of late for batting practice. We weren't late for the game, but we were late for batting practice. And honestly, Bill, because we're relief pitchers, nobody noticed.
Yeah, you gave kinda zero bleeps, Rob Dibble.
No, nobody cared.
It's cool, Dibs. It's cool. We'll call you when we need you. Rob Dibble on
yeah,
the show.
Yeah, we'll call you at 10 o'clock. It's only 6 o'clock, so don't worry about it.
You got time. Go. The buffet's up and running. Go eat some kiwi and some pineapple. Rob Dibble on the show. All right, I'm going to give you three names, three teams. You tell me which of these, or maybe the primary one, you think is legit come the end of the year. These are, for me, teams that are a little bit overachieving, certainly to my expectations. Red Sox, Giants, Cubs. You believe in all three of these? You believe in one of these come September?
I believe in all three of them, really.
You do?
Red Sox offense is amazing. They need another starting pitcher. I don't know how close Chris Sale is. They could use another starting pitcher, although they've been pretty good. Their bullpen, they could probably use another arm there because they're just last nine outs of every game, they're going to their bullpen. Giants, I believe in them because they play team baseball. They're like the Rays of the West. You know, they don't have a ton of big name. I love the Talkman trade. That kid was just going to sit on the bench with the Yankees. That is a great trade for the Giants. But no, when you teach team baseball, Bill, you can win. So we have the Cubs. I love the Cubs because nobody really wants to win the National League Central anyway. So I think it's the Cubs and the Brewers in that division. But even the Reds have great offense and not great pitching. It's kind of sad. They let all their good pitchers go. DeScalfani went to the Giants. You had Bauer go to the Dodgers. You know, those guys should have been paid by the Reds. They should still be pitching for the Reds. So, you know, those guys are doing great for other teams. That's why when you see how the Giants made their team this year and how the Red Sox made their team, Chaim Bloom, give Chaim Bloom a lot of credit. I see every Red Sox game. He built a team around speed, being able to run the bases, and they're hitting like almost 270 as a team. They're great at hitting the ball the other way. And if you watch Rafael Devers at third base, his defense has gotten a lot better. But they got J.D. Martinez and Xander Bogaerts. That Verdugo is a great kid. He's not Mookie Betts, but he's fabulous. So they've got enough to win. It's just so does every other team. I think the Rays won 19 games this month. They're insane. So there's just so many more teams that are doing it at a different level because they realize we don't need $300 million players to win.
Dibs, this was so much fun as it always is. And I'll say this, Rob Dibble, we're in a time of revolution, upheaval, paradigm shifts. Rob Dibble for commissioner. I'm just going to put it out there. The world
God,
would
no.
never be the same. What do you mean, God, no? God, yes.
You do not want me as the commissioner.
I kind of do.
You know, because I'm a historian when it comes to the game. I know we were going to talk about the sticky substances. Think about this. Rosin's been around baseball since 1887, Bill. It's time to give the pitchers some kind of sticky substance we can all agree on that's legal and move on. You start fighting over petty things, it makes the game, it hurts the product.
It makes it look small. And Rob, you're a guy, and look, you're the expert, but I agree with you, your expertise here. Let these guys police. I think so many problems stem from the fact they don't let these guys police themselves anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and all right, so I'm watching the Red Sox game real quick. and Pavetta's on the mound. I thought it was Garrett Richards. And one of the, I think it was the A's maybe, he stuck his elbow out to try to get hit by the pitch. The next batter, Richards threw at the guy's head. Even the Red Sox announcers, Eckersley and Ellis Burks, went nuts. Because that's not right. You shouldn't do that. You know, if you're going to have the guy hit, wear one in the ribs, that's fine. But because these guys don't know how to pitch inside, they certainly don't know how to police themselves, somebody's going to get hurt. You know, the Pilar getting hit in the face, that was accidental because the guy doesn't know how to, you know, command a rising fastball. Could have killed the kid. So, you know, the rules aren't helping because what you're doing is you're not teaching it at the lower levels. And then when they do get a 99-mile-an-hour fastball, they don't know how to control it.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up on 90s baseball. I remember dominating the inside part of the plate, right?
Yep.
And that battle between pitcher and hitter and how much you get to hug the plate and to what and the control it took to hit a guy the right way or to brush him back and not hit him. That was, I found, maybe I'm old school. I found it beautiful and important for the game.
Bill, listen, the most thing I'm proud of in my career as a guy who threw in the upper 90s was I faced, with postseason, over 2,000 hitters. I hit 12. Okay, and I'm known as a headhunter. Get that. So that's command. I always could locate the pitches. And when I started to fail at that, like in 1996 after my second shoulder surgery, it scared me a little bit to the point where I retired the first time. So it's more about teaching how to locate these pitches, how to visualize where you want them to end up, and not get so over-aggressive that you could cost somebody their career or their life.
Dibs, I love talking baseball with you. Thanks for making the time. Have a good holiday weekend.
Thank you. You too, man.
All right, pal. That was great.
Out of sports. Take care.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Hallelujah. I'm a bum.
All he's doing is a whole lot of damn nothing.
I'm a bum.
You rotten bum!
I'm a bum.
They're a bunch of bums.
I'm a bum. I'm a bum.
Who's the bum this week? Let's find out on Writer Than You on CBS Sports Radio.
There's a lot of nominees, guys. If I miss anybody, Tommy, Bogus, just you throw some names. And I've got Urban Meyer as a perennial nominee. He's replaced Jay Cutler in this just continuous list. Yeah, we're going to bring in Timmy as a tight end. Oh, he might have a Taysom Hill rule. Quarterback, maybe a little. I don't know. Cool. Ty Lue's on here. I want to narrow down the Clippers' blame to somebody. And the reality is we haven't talked a lot about Ty Lue, but I think it was a giant question mark whether he was a good coach. I would not have hired him, but I understand why you would. If you lose a series, it's largely on that guy. Figure it out. I know you got a guy in adult diapers out there, but figure it out. Bogus, it's not going to stop. Miles Teller's on the list. He's not even an athlete. A, put your shirt on. B, get off my timeline. That's it. That's what I got. Everyone Kwame Brown has attacked is not. It's just you're all on the list. All of us. Will Craig, the first baseman for the Pirates, is on there because you know, understand how baseball works. Naomi Osaka, you're on the list. You're not the only one that's stressing in your life. Tom's on the list. Tom Benedetto for scheduling a extended LA work trip. See how long that goes. Could be a few weeks or whatever it is. And I don't know, maybe more. And interestingly, he waited to time it to when I'm going to be in New York. Little. Oh, you're going to be in New York. Interesting.
What a coincidence.
Let's see. Last time I came to New York, how much? You remind me. You give me the minute total. How many minutes did we hang out in New York when I was in New York, Tom?
I believe
outside
that's,
of the office.
Yeah, I believe that's zero.
You pulled a zero. Got it. So he's like, don't worry. When I come to LA, we're gonna hang. Oh, okay. When you come? Oh, I'm going to New York this week. Cool. Hey, I'm coming to LA that week. Oh, what a shame we're gonna miss each other. You're on the list. Anybody? I mean, I did call someone playoff PS pants about 100 times. I'm not gonna nominate myself because it's accurate, but it's close.
Now that makes you hero of the week, not bum of the week.
Oh, it's hero of the week. We should start one of those. I'll just make it me every week.
Exactly.
Hero of the week, me. and then it just goes into the Imogen. It's over. No explanation.
Urban always nominated for Bum of the Week. Bill always nominated for
I'm always
Hero
of the Week.
Yeah.
Bogus literally just rolled his eyes so badly, I'm worried he damaged one of them. I just, be careful. They can't.
I have a Hero of the Week for you, though.
Who is it?
I'm reading this straight from the interweb right now. Apparently a dude punched Miles Teller in the face on Wednesday outside a bathroom in a restaurant in Maui.
Because he has that kind of face, or what? What happened?
TMZ says that this guy's a wedding planner and says that Teller owes him $60,000 from his 2019 wedding. So I don't know why, which was in Maui. So I guess he works and lives there. Saw him in the restaurant, and as Teller came out of the bathroom, he socked him right in the face. They went back and forth a little bit, and then Teller and his wife left. No mention of Aaron Rodgers, but somebody out there, for different reasons than you, got a little Miles Teller revenge apparently on Wednesday.
Did this guy get arrested?
I don't know that they've finished the legal proceedings just yet.
Look, I don't know anything about this, but if it's an if, right? I don't know if it's true. But if that's true, if he owes the guy $60,000, look, no one should get punched in the face. I'm going to start there. It's not okay. Never do it. But if anyone should get punched in the face, it'd be Miles Teller if he didn't pay $60,000 to a guy that probably needs the money. I mean, Miles Teller does have a you should punch me in the face, but you shouldn't punch people in the face. But he does have a face. If that were okay, that would beg the outcome. Hey, why don't you punch me in the face? That makes sense.
It does.
You really enjoy him getting punched in the face.
I enjoy you enjoying him getting punched in the face.
I like how you operate through other people's, like how you like you endorse things. But oh yeah, this other guy did this amazing thing. Oh, do you think that's cool? No. You don't? Nobody did it. He punched him in the face.
I have no problem with Miles Teller photo logging Aaron Rodgers' week in Hawaii.
You don't?
But I know that. No, who cares?
Have you seen him? Have you seen that smug little punch me in the face?
He does have a punchable face. Yes, he does.
Yeah. Punch me in the face. All right. Anybody? Any other nominees that we good?
No, I'm good.
New era? For this ridiculous catastrophe with the MLB hats. And can I just nominate Aaron Rodgers himself, please? Sure. I mean, I know he's also gotten... look, last time we saw this dude doing his actual job, not Jeopardy or whatever the hell he's doing right now, he was getting beat in his own house by Tom Brady, who is practicing for the next football season because he's a winner and a professional, and that's what he does, and that's why he stays on top. Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers is in Hawaii with an actress, and people think it's cute for some reason. If you're enjoying that, it's your type of social media reality show content. That's good for you, but I'm a football fan, and Aaron Rodgers is a gigantic disappointment again right now.
And that's a great point. I'm going to just add, he's also chose to hang out with a guy who has a punch me in the face.
That too.
I mean, that's
he has annoying friends also on top of it.
It's a choice you make. Are you guys proud of me for not saying during the Miles Teller thing, Teller me more? Walk a miles in his shoes?
No. I was until now.
Yeah. You were. All right, I'll put myself on the list. Bill Ryder, me, Bum of the Week nominee, official, written down on this little piece of paper. I think we all know it's Will Craig, right? Step on first base. I'm a Cubs fan. I'm pretty sure the guy that scores on my fantasy team, I was embarrassed for the sport. Look, it's a small part, right? But a small part of America died on that play and isn't coming back. I mean, a small part of America is gone forever. Will Craig, you're the bum of the week, bro.
That's your Bum of the Week.
I detest you!
On Lighter Than You.
All right, let's lean into our excellence. Let's go double back-to-back segments. Are you ready, Bogish? Are you ready, Tommy, for Bet Ryder? Oh!
Bill makes the tough picks so you can fade accordingly. It's time for Bet Ryder with Bill.
Oh, here we go. You guys ready? Perfect yesterday. Perfect. So the line has moved in Atlanta. It's too bad. Two hours ago, Atlanta were 4-point favorites. They're now 5-point favorites. I actually hate that line. You know what the right pick here is? Don't bet on the game. That's the correct pick. That's probably where we should be. I hate it. Over under is 211 too, which is also just like hate it. The under is usually the better bet, especially in the postseason. It clocks in a lot. It clocked in yesterday in Lakers Suns, but I actually bet it in Utah, and each team scored like 400 points, like an all-star game. I'm a little shook. Ugh. I think Atlanta's going to win the game. But five's a lot. That I'm not going to bet it, but I think I'd actually go Knicks plus five if I did. I think it can be a close game. And the problem with that is last night the Lakers, and I bet on the Lakers to cover. The Lakers almost didn't cover at the end because there was some garbage time stuff going on. And then the Lakers hit some free throws, right? I mean, there was a point where there was a garbage three-point shot that could have, I was a little worried about it. I could absolutely see Atlanta winning this game by, you know, 7 or 8, but there just being some ridiculous three-point shot at the end or just a couple, right, some garbage play. So it's a pass, but I would go Knicks getting 5 points if I had to bet.
Knicks plus five is the bet, but I don't want to make it either. This series is too close. This game is too close. I don't think the Knicks can actually get themselves blown out the way they play defense, even in Atlanta. So I do think the Hawks win the game, but I don't like those 5 points either.
Yeah, it's an avoid. Tom?
Yeah, I feel the same way about avoid being the best route, but I'll take the Hawks here to cover. I think this is going to be an ugly first road game for the Knicks in the playoffs in a very long time. And the weird thing about the Knicks is I think they've only played one quarter out of the eight so far in the series of actual Knick basketball, and they absolutely destroyed the Hawks in that quarter. But I don't know how many more we're going to see. And I don't know that we'll get more than one max tonight in their first road game again in the playoffs in a long time. So I'll take the Hawks on the cover.
Bogdanovich is not going to miss every three-point shot he takes in the second half, and John Collins isn't going to score zero.
Exactly.
I just think Randall will be a little bit better in the first half. The lines are moving a lot. Obviously, we'll go with what's updated. Boston's now at plus +8. It was 7.5 earlier. I'm going Brooklyn. I think Brooklyn's more than capable of losing one of these games. It just feels like Boston has lost its spirit. They had some confidence and some swagger in themselves, and were competitive in that first game through the first 3.5 quarters. And that just feels like it's totally dissipated. This feels like a sweep. It feels like everybody knows it. I have no insight, but it does. The team doesn't mean this is true. It just looks from the outside, no information, like a team where the coach, Brad Stevens, has lost the locker room a little bit. I'm not a big Nets guy. Right now, I'm a Nets skeptic, but now I'm not skeptical of their talent. And I think those are teams. These are the kind of teams. James Harden's the kind of player that beats up on the weak and the insecure. And I think Boston's both. So even though it's a huge number, I will go Nets minus -8. And I'll probably go on it, too. I'll probably actually bet on it.
I want to take those points. I want to show some confidence in the Celtics. They have one good game in them in this series back on their home floor. But they give you no reason to think that. Plus, it's the Nets on the road in the playoffs with fans. The first little bit of adversity, we'll see these three in together. So how do they respond to that? Maybe that's a bump in the road, but again, just game two spooked me. There's nothing left in Boston. The Nets seem to be in a good place despite all being together for the first time in a long time. So I'm with you. I'll lay those eight and take the Nets.
It's weird to me, too, that the Celtics did so much work to try to get it out that, like, Brad Stevens' job isn't in jeopardy at all, because that might be the only spark that I think could help them here. They got nothing going. I think it's going to be over in the second quarter. It's going to be a blowout again tonight.
I did, too. I mean, eight's the kind of thing where, you know, you can be up 13 or 14 most of the game. The coach is right. You sort of, the code is you wait until, usually it's the losing coach. It is the team that's behind throws in their subs. So you could have 3 minutes of garbage time in a 16-point game where just it gets down to 11, right, or 10. It doesn't matter. And then with 3 seconds, a guy throws up a three. That happens. It's a lot of points. It's hard to cover those, but I think it's Nets. And then Vegas clearly knows something. They've got Dallas at home up 2-0. As the dogs, Luka Doncic and co, getting 2.5 points. And Vegas is usually pretty smart, and I think obviously Vegas is part of the price here is the idea that the Clippers are not going to lose in four, right, or not going to lose in five, and they're going to show some heart and some fight. But I'm just going to go with playoff P's pants. I'm going to go with Kawhi Leonard looking like he's disinterested. I'm going to go with Ty Lue's name soon being Ty Loser. I'm going to go with the fact that Luka Doncic is a remarkable talent and a buddy of mine. My buddy Greg pointed this out yesterday. Fearless. And that's it. Like, I don't know you guys how much you watched the last game, but there was a huge play when the game was close where Doncic basically bullied his way into the paint, had like a turnaround. He turned around. It's like a three-footer. It's a bunny. And instead, he made this pass to the left side, a little floater and out of bounds, and it fell. Momentum shift, and oh my God, and it was like a one possession. Oh, he could. And he just like looked at whoever it was he tried to, and was like, dude, my bad. It was so chill. It was so chill. You think he like bumped, like, oh, my bad. Well, he wasn't even sweating it. He's so confident. I'm on Dallas, man. I'm riding the Dallas train.
It's like Vegas understood that weird cut I played from Ty Lue yesterday where he tried to say it was going to be harder for the Mavericks to play well at home, so they make them the underdogs here. I'm with you as well on this one. Mavs outright to win this game. I didn't see this one coming at all. I thought the Clippers would get through at least a round, but I think Luka's just too much for them right now, and they're just in a weirdly broken place. And what do they call it? A gentleman's sweep? I think the Clippers' win comes in game four, not tonight in game three.
You're going to money line this thing.
Yeah.
You get plus 125. Sure. Yeah, it means you're just betting on them straight up.
Whisper phone nods. He's in.
Do it. There he is.
Money line. Hit it. Book it.
All the money. Don't tell your wife until you buy her a diamond with the winnings.
I mean, I would love some points to pick the Clippers here. This is the biggest game since Game 7 against the Rockets in 2015 in the franchise's recent history. This is an absolutely tremendously big game for the Clippers, and they're not exactly rise-to-the-occasion type of guys, this group. But I think they find a way to at least win this game. I think they're in huge trouble in this series, but I'll even give some points. I got to take the Clippers tonight.
Like it. Tom's on the other side of some of these. I'll say this about the Dallas game. It's a trap. Like, it is a trappy line. It is intended to pull people like me in. It really is. It probably is Clippers by five. Like, it's one of these things where I'm going to look back and be like, it's a trap. What am I doing?
It's a trap!
Yeah. It's how Vegas built a bunch of beautiful glass monuments to its own greed in the middle of the desert. Suckers like me. But sometimes the sucker gets lucky. I think they're short in Luka. I do. Maybe they know so. It's weird, you know? They always know. I'm not endorsing this behavior at all. I was going to make a joke, and I'm going to tell a story. I'm not endorsing this. I'm just telling you a story. I was going to make the joke. This is not really a joke. Vegas sometimes knows, like, these little weird little details. Like, oh, this guy's side chick. Not okay. And this town is real special to him, and he plays well. I'm being serious, right? And I went to have dinner yesterday at the JW Marriott next to Staples after my hit before the game, and with a buddy, and a woman walked in. I'm not trying to be, but like, was just so shockingly attractive that we started placing bets on which player. Because what happened, like, there are, again, it's not the form of, it's not the relationship code that I happen to live by, but I had forgotten that there is this sort of subculture, not every guy, but of women who are dating guys when they're in certain towns. And she came in and she ordered a very expensive meal and some drinks and ate by herself and then paid and then pulled out her Ritz-Carlton card. And because you could see it, right? And then went back to wherever she came from. Anyway, that's my story. I got nothing else. It was just like, oh, yeah, that's right. All right, here's my quick. When I was a brand new NBA reporter, we were in Memphis. It was a Tuesday. It was cold out. It was drizzly. It was miserable. It was 8 in the morning. Half the guys were hungover. We're all coming off of back-to-back. We had to go to shoot around. It was covering the heat. Walked in with, like, Brian Windhorst and all these, like, you know, well-known, Jeff Zilgit, all these people. Everybody was there. And it was like I walked into a club, right? I'm in a dreary life, and I walk into the lobby of a sort of rundown upscale hotel in Memphis. I love Memphis, but it was, you know, an awful day. One of those days where just like, you like, oh, I work for a living and working for a living sucks. And it's like I walked into a magical club. It was like that scene from Community where you go behind the bush and it's just like this magical trampoline of women, minus that guy turning out to be a terrible racist. But anyway, that's a Community thing. And I turned to someone, right, like the amateur rookie that I was, I'm like, what's going on? And they just were like, bro, It's the NBA. Turns out there's just like this sort of ecosystem of attractive women who know where to go, and it's like a dating pool. It's amazing. Anyway, it's back. It's back. It's back in LA. It's back everywhere. I've talked too long. I've talked too much. Let's get an update from Andrew Bogish.
And that update is sponsored by Credit Karma Money. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Let's start with Chris Paul's shoulder. It's not good at the moment. Just 27 minutes, 7 points, 6 assists in last night's 109-95 loss to the Lakers, dropping the Suns into a 2-1 hole. CP3 can only shrug carefully.
It is what it is. You control what you can control. I know I do everything on a daily basis, yearly basis, to prepare myself to be ready to play. And when things happen, they happen. And you got to overcome it.
He was more annoyed post-game about the officiating.
I was shooting a lot of free throws last game tonight. And, I mean, if I was a betting man, 11 games in a row.
That last part is the key. That's a veiled shot at Scott Foster, the referee, who now Paul has lost 11 consecutive times when Foster works one of his games. The two have a long history. Foster, though, not part of the Suns game 2 loss just last night. The Nuggets took a 2-1 lead with a 120-115 win in Portland, with Nikola Jokic posting 36 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists. And the Bucks blew out the Heat again for a 3-0 lead, 113-84 in Miami. Giannis 17 points and 17 boards. Tonight, the Knicks and Hawks break their tie in Game 3 in Atlanta. The Nets take their 2-0 lead to Boston, and the Mavs go for a 3-0 edge on the Clippers in Dallas. The Hurricanes done with the Predators, taking Game 6 in OT 4-3. Carolina now faces Tampa Bay in Round 2, and the Canadiens blew a 3-0 lead, then beat the Leafs 4-3 in overtime to force Game 6 tomorrow in Montreal. Baseball last night, the Diamondbacks a 5-4 loss in 10 at home to the Cardinals. That's an 11-game skid for them. It's 10 for the Orioles, 5-1 losers at the White Sox, and the Dodgers top the Giants 4-3. LA's won 13 of 15, and Juventus is officially part of ways with manager Andrea Pirlo after one season and losing the Serie A title for the first time in 11 years. Massimiliano Allegri is in charge again, like he was up until 2019. Bill, back to you.
You were so proud of that pronunciation. Crushed it. Reminds me of those. Yeah. Remember that SNL skit where George Bush came up and was like pronouncing every single delegate from South Korea? Remember that? Back in the day?
Yeah.
You just did it. And I'm proud of you.
Thank
you. It's amazing. You're the guy. Have a great weekend. At Andrew Bogish on Twitter. Thanks, pal. Let's do a, here's a shocker. Let's do a truncated version of Buy or Sell next here on CBS Sports Radio.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, so what I was getting at in the last segment with the Clippers, the Kawhi Leonard era slash experiment comes to a head tonight is what I'm getting at, one of the biggest games in recent franchise history. He had a giant first half in Game 2, but faded down the stretch, still finished 14 of 21 with 41 points in Game 2. He's going to need probably an even bigger performance tonight. It's worth pointing out once again, though, his player option, which allows him to get out of the final year of this Clippers deal, is by August 1st of this summer. So he could easily turn around and opt out of this contract if they lose tonight. Buy or sell a loss tonight will directly lead to a Kawhi Leonard opt-out and another tragic ending for a promising Clippers era.
Not with great certainty, but I think it's a buy.
Buy.
I don't think he'll stick around. Can't fire Ty Lue. And, you know, be careful what you ask for, right? Like, the NBA has been littered with stars who forced their way to players or forced players to their way that they ended up not wanting to play with. Paul George is going to turn out not to be the guy if this comes to bear. I certainly think Kawhi's a mystery. I don't know. Nobody knows. But my best guess, that's all anybody has, yeah, I think he goes somewhere else.
All right, let's do two fun football props because BetOnline dropped a bunch of them this week, including first coach to be fired in 2021. Here is a list of favorites. Plus 750, Mike McCarthy. Plus 800, Vic Fangio. Plus 850, Matt Nagy. Plus 1,000, John Gruden. And plus 1,100, Mike Zimmer. Buy or sell, the first head coach fired will, in fact, come from this group of five favorites.
Do they have to be fired during the season? Like, Black Monday doesn't count? Like, it's in-season firing?
It's the assumption that somebody will be fired before Black Monday. So, yeah, I think it's an in-season firing.
I mean, give me Mike McCarthy for 800, Alex. I guess
Bye.
Alex. Yeah, I don't know that anybody gets fired, but that seems like the spot if the wheels come off there. I think they could.
It's just about Jarrah. Jarrah couldn't even admit he was wrong about Jason Garrett, so who knows when he's going to be in the mood to admit he's wrong here.
They'd have to be so bad, or they'd have to be like 1-5.
Which seems possible and kind of relates to this next one. Another competitive category this year is going to be Comeback Player of the Year. Here's how those favorites stack. Dak Prescott, 5-2. Saquon Barkley, 6-1. Joe Burrow and Nick Bosa, both 15-2 odds. Buy or sell, Dak Prescott will be the 2021 NFL Comeback Player of the Year.
I'm going to sell that.
Sell.
And I'm literally going to put $100 down the show's over buying those odds for Joe Burrow. I love Joe Burrow. For me, that's just he's upright. He's healthy. And I think this guy was massively celebrated. We just forget. So we move on to the next thing so quickly. If he's healthy, he's so talented. I know what that organization is, but I just saw Baker Mayfield win a playoff game. So anything's possible.
Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like year two, even if you're, you know, you missed a big chunk of it and a young head coach who has the opportunity maybe to grow a little bit in the role. Wow, that was a real... So you're going to... We're going to be trading places for the next week at least.
That's right. I'll wave from the sky as you pass the other way.
I think I'm literally landing in New York about an hour after you leave. So when you're sort of over Pennsylvania, right? Just get on the monitor. Give me a little wave. Give me a little, like, you know, peace sign.
Again, pure coincidence. Pure coincidence.
It's an amazing thing. Your extended Los Angeles business trip. Very excited to see it whenever it is, you know, New York or LA or LA or LA or whatever it is. He is Tom DiBenedetto, producer underscore Tom. Thank you to Andrew Bogish. Thank you to Rob Dibble, my buddy. I'm Bill Ryder. The show's Ryder than you. Appreciate you listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here. We'll be here Monday on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.